Recording here. Welcome back to another episode in our series on Tefillah, the past, the practical, and the profound. It's good to see you all here. It seems like there was some confusion last week about whether we were meeting, whether we weren't meeting. In any case, it's good to see you here. We'll meet next in 2 weeks from today, which is, I believe, November 20th at 2 p.m. Hope to see you all. Hope to see you all then. The past several sessions have been dedicated to devoting specific prayers from our liturgy. We first started at the beginning with Moda Ani. We had three sessions on Moda Ani. And then we moved on, because of the war in Israel, to discuss the Tefillah L'Shalom HaMedina, the prayer for the welfare of the state of Israel. We spoke about the history. We spoke about some of the theology behind it. And today we'll take a break from specific prayers to talk about something that is endemic to all prayers, which is a halacha of prayer. And that is the following halacha. Actually, before I explain specifically what that halacha is, I want to show you a picture. And the truth is that what we're going to learn today, we should also note, is actually not so detached from the liturgy, because the truth is, at least right now, in many synagogues, Lower Merion Synagogue included — we're so close to Lower Merion Synagogue, you could just point right over there, it's right over there — Lower Merion Synagogue included, we have been inserting special prayers for the safety of Israeli soldiers, for the end of the conflict, and for the hostages, and for injured people who have been injured in the attacks and in the ongoing war. And two of those prayers are from Psalms. They're from Tehillim. And one of them, the last one, did we say, or the second one, Tehillim Perek Kuf Lamed, chapter 130, is Shir HaMa'alot V'Ma'amakim Kraticha Adonai. A song of ascents, I pray to you from the depths. We're going to talk more about that in a second, but today's halacha is actually based on that verse, and we'll see exactly what I mean by that soon. But first, let's talk about the picture. Does anybody recognize this picture on the front? Admittedly, I don't know if everybody's as like this. Mine got a little bit whitewashed almost. It's in Sfat. The Lower East Side of Israel. It's not the Arishul. Looks like the Arishul, and it's very close to the Arishul. It is a shul in Sfat. It's the Abuhav Synagogue in Tzfat. Anybody ever heard of the Abuhav Synagogue in Tzfat? The Abuhav Synagogue is a synagogue in Tzfat. It was built in the 15th century, although sometime, I think, in the 1830s, there was an earthquake that ruined almost the entire building, except for one wall, and it's been reconstructed, except for the wall. The wall was actually the wall with the Aron Kodesh. That was the only wall that survived the earthquake. It's open to the public. You can go if you go to Tzfat. It's open to the public. I've been there. Maybe some of you who have been to Tzfat and have taken those synagogue tours or even wandered around on your own may have stumbled upon it. It's named after Rabbi Yitzchak Abuhav. Rabbi Yitzchak Abuhav was also known as the Mahari Abuhav, was a Spanish Rav and a Kabbalist, who actually we're going to speak more about later, because it's really just a coincidence that he is the namesake of the shul and also happens to be a very relevant rabbi when it comes to the halachos that we're going to discuss. In any case, he's the namesake of the shul because, according to tradition, he was the one who designed it. Well, didn't we say that he was Spanish? And the truth is, yes, he did live in Spain. The Mahari Abuhav did not live in Sfat. He actually did not live anywhere in the Holy Land. But the story goes that he designed it in Spain, and his students, when they emigrated to Tzfat, built the synagogue according to his plans, and they named it after him. And so he was apparently, according to tradition, the person who designed the synagogue. Now, that's very important. It's very important to remember, we'll keep that in mind, that he was the one who designed this synagogue. Let me ask you a question. To the extent that you can make it out in this photo, I hope that some people's are a little bit easier to see than the way my print came out. But what do you notice about the synagogue? Anything, at least the picture in this, the synagogue as it's depicted in this photo, does anything stand out? The beam is raised. The beam is not just raised, you're absolutely right. The beam is pretty significantly raised. That's a pretty high bima. It's a pretty high bima as far as things are concerned. In fact, you can't really see this from the picture, but there are actually, I believe, 7 steps going up to the bima. It's pretty tall. The bima is pretty tall in this picture. And that's actually what I wanted to harp on today, is the height of the bima in this photo. And it's a good segue into the topic that we're going to talk about. The title of today's shiur is What's Wrong with Standing Tall? The Mitzvah to Pray in a Low Place. The purpose of today's shiur is to share practical knowledge about the mechanics of prayer, so that we'll know what to do and we'll know how to daven. And so today's shiur is called What's Wrong with Standing Tall? The Mitzvah to Pray in a Low Place. As we'll see soon enough, there is indeed a mitzvah to pray in a low place, to specifically not to daven in a high place. We're going to talk about what we mean by that. But according to that, this bima should be usher. This bima in the Mahari Abuhav of Shul should be usher. And as we'll see, that's not the case, because there are nuances to this halacha that will explain this. But just by a show of hands, how many people here have heard of this idea before, that you're not supposed to daven on a high place, meaning from an elevated platform? Anybody heard of this? Any sound familiar to anybody? Okay, great. So we're all going to be able to look at it with fresh eyes today. And that's what we're going to talk about. So you turn... Okay. Yeah, maybe. So I'm going to have to defend the custom for rabbis and sometimes shul presidents also to sit on the bima. We're going to talk about that. Otherwise, I would be impugning myself. So,
what about an Ezra Kashi? Isn't that traditionally a rabbi, or is that just what's done here?
So different shuls do different things. We'll talk about it as well. Certainly here it is raised, although you can't really tell because the wall is just... You can only tell if you're looking at it, but you're absolutely right that it is a race. So we're going to talk about that. Okay, so let's turn to page number 2, which is really page number 1 of the sources, and we'll read that pasuk. The pasuk reads in Tehillim, Shir Hama'alot V'Ma'amakim Karticha Adonai, a song of ascents. David HaMelech says, out of the depths I call to you, O Lord. David HaMelech essentially is calling to God from the depths. Now, what are the depths that David HaMelech is calling out from? So... many Mefarshim argue that he's referring to the depths of exile, the depths of Galut. If you recall, David HaMelech himself was exiled. Shaul got angry at David HaMelech, and he tried to seek his life, and David HaMelech had to flee. So maybe that's what David HaMelech is talking about here. But in any case, the Gemara, the Talmud, derives from this a very powerful halacha. Gemara Maseches Brachos, that's a typo, it should say Brachos, not Brachod, but on Dav Yoram Medbeis, Va'amar Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, Mishum Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, Al Ya'amod Adam B'makom Gavoha V'yitpalel, Ela B'makom Namuch V'yitpalel. A person should not stand in a high place and pray, but rather in a low place and pray. How do we know? Well, the Gemara says, "Shene'amar mima'amakim karaticha Hashem." I called to you from the depths, mima'amakim. And we derive from here, the Gemara says, that one is not supposed to pray from a high place. It's preferable to pray from a low place, but one should certainly not pray from an elevated place. Now, the Eish Lavram points out, and we should note before we go any further, that this is a halacha. And the Gemara says, Al Yitpalel, referring specifically to one part of Tefillah. Which part of Tefillah? Shemona Esrei. We're referring to Shemona Esrei. The Eish Lavram makes this point explicitly of Buchech. But this is the pshat, that usually when the Gemara talks about Tefillah, what we're talking about is the Amida, is the Shemona Esrei. And that is not Pesukei Dezimra or anything like that. We're talking about Shemona Esrei. For Pesukei Dezimra, you can stand on the ledge if you want to. You can stand on a chair. You don't have to daven Pesukei Dezimra in a low place. But that's what we're talking about in a low place. But that's what we're talking about here. But the halacha specifically refers to Shemona Esrei. The question is, granted that this is something derived from a statement of David HaMelech in Tehillim, but why? Why? Why is there such... what's the rationale for such a rule in? Why is it so important that we daven not from a high place, that we daven at least from a ground level place, or maybe even from a low place? Why do you think that's important?
Well, it says here arrogance, and it's like looking down.
Okay, before you look at the source sheet, what do you think? What do you think? With Bamot, with altars. So that's an interesting idea. The idea, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, is that, you know, Jewish people are not allowed to have altars outside of the Beis HaMikdash to slaughter their own sacrifices on. So maybe tefillah is b'makom ha-korbanos. Tefillah takes the place of the sacrifices. And maybe if you were to offer your tefillah on a raised platform, it would be like building your own bama. That's a very fascinating idea. It's not one given by the Rishonim, but I think that's a very interesting thought. So there are three reasons given by the Rishonim for this halacha, not to daven on a low place, on a high place. The first reason is presented by the Tosefta. The Tosefta is also the position of the Meiri and the Levush, but it's first presented by the Tosefta. What is the Tosefta? The Tosefta is a group of texts that are essentially supplementary to the Mishnah. They didn't make it into the Mishnah, but they're also considered to be generally authoritative. And there's a and they're written on each tractate. So Brachos has a Gemara, it has a Mishnah, and it also has a Tosefta, a collection of teachings that didn't make it into the Mishnah, but are still considered to be important religious texts, and we sometimes do reference them, and we're actually about to reference them now. In source number 3, the Tosefta writes this halacha, Lo yamod adam lo agabi mita v'lo agabi kisei. When you daven, you should not stand on a bed, you should not stand on a chair, v'lo gabi safsal, or a bench, v'lo gabi makom gavoa, and you shouldn't stand on top of any high place. V'itpalo, why? She'ein gavhut lifnei hamakom, because that would be considered pridefulness, and there should not be any pridefulness when standing before God, as it says, v'ma'akim ma'akim kraticha, that David HaMelech says, I called out to you from the depths. So we see from here, according to this Tosefta, that the reason we don't daven from a high place is because of gavhut, which is because of pridefulness. It's because of arrogance. It would be considered arrogant to raise yourself up when you're talking to God. Usually, being raised up is a position of kavod, it's a position of honor, and therefore, it's not appropriate to do that when davening to Hashem, to elevate yourself, because we should really be doing when we approach Hashem is humbling ourselves. We don't want to make ourselves seem more important. That would be disrespectful to God. And in fact, that is what the Meiri writes. The Meiri writes in his commentary on Brachos, Meiri is one of the French Rishonim, the same exact reason. That is as if because ki'ilu kavrato l'karev et tfilato l'shamayim, you're giving the impression that you're trying to get closer to heaven. And Levush kind of explains what's meant by this. The truth, actually, is that the Levush in source number 5, Rabbi Mordechai Yaffa, argues that it's arrogant both when you're praying with other people and when you're praying alone, but for different reasons. There's a different reason why it's arrogant if you're doing it with other people, meaning in shul, versus if you're doing it at home, meaning there's no one else in the presence. That's also arrogant, but for different reasons. What does he mean by that? So look at what he writes. He says, I'll read it in English. It seems like pridefulness if one stands in a place that is higher than the rest of the nation. Meaning, if you're davening with a group of other people in shul, and everybody else is on one level, and you're the only person that's on a higher level, so then it's prideful in the fact that you're making yourself out to be more important than everybody else. You're literally putting yourself on a pedestal, and everybody else is down there, so that's considered to be arrogant. According to that reason, though, when you're at home, there should be no problem with it, because if the whole reason it's prideful is because it's showing that you think you're more important than everybody else, then when you're doing it at home, there should be no reason. So he says, no, it's even usher when you're at home. Why? He says, because if you stand on a high place, is it as if you are blaspheming God? How are you blaspheming God? Well, he says, God is in the heavens, at least symbolically speaking, God is in the heavens and the heavens are above. And so by you standing on a high place, it's kind of like the Tower of Babel. You're trying to get close to God, as if you could physically get close to God. It's a failure to realize, he says, that the entire world is filled with God's glory. In other words, when you're with other people, so then it's prideful because you're lifting yourself up while everybody else is standing on the ground. But even when you're alone, he says, it conveys an improper understanding of our relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and God's omnipresence. God is everywhere. The pasuk says, "Nishayahu melo chol haaretz kivodo." The entire world is filled with God's glory. And if that's the case, then why do you need to get higher? It's as if you're denying that by trying to make it seem like God is in the heavens, and you think that your tefillah is going to be more accepted the closer you are to the heavens. It's like if I'm trying to get someone's attention, the closer I am when I start shouting, the more of a chance they'll have of noticing me. And that's not how Hashem works. Hashem does not answer your questions depending on how physically close you are to the skies, because God is not in the sky. God is everywhere. And so therefore, even Mima Amakim, even in the depths. And so it is for that reason that it conveys, it blasphemes God, because it sort of cuts short his potential. You're basically saying that you think God is not everywhere when you daven trying to get to the heavens. And so that is why it's problematic, the Levush says, both if you're with other people and if you're davening by yourself. That's what the Levush says. So we have two reasons for this prohibition. Number one is that, we have one reason that we've looked at so far. It's because it's arrogant, but we have two explanations for what this means. According to the Levush, when you're with other people, it's because you're making yourself out to be greater than them. According to the Levush, though, when you're by yourself, it's because you're denying God's power and God's ability to be everywhere, making it seem a little bit maybe like you're on the same level, that God is not everywhere and you have to come physically close in order to reach Him. That's not really appropriate or respectful of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's also a good drasha to be made here, by the way, which is that tefillah is valid no matter where you are. Even Mima Amakim, especially Mima Amakim. God is in those depths with you. When we're all suffering, when we're all struggling, we're all going through various things in our lives, we should remember that God hears us, Mima Amakim. God hears us when we're in the depth of our suffering. You don't have to, the Baal Shem Tov used to say that there's nothing more pure than a broken heart. Hashem hears those tefillos. No one should ever feel chas v'shalom like because they're in a bad place in their life that God is less willing to hear their tefillos. It's just not true. God hears us all mima amakim. Okay, that's the first reason is arrogance. The second reason is number two, which is that the Beit Yosef quotes from Rav Yitzchak Abuhav, the Mahari Abuhav, the one who designed this shul, so he was clearly on board with this halacha. If he's one of the advocates of the various reasons behind it, and the Beis Yosef writes from the Mahari Abuhav, again Rabbi Yitzchak Abuhav, that in source number 6, V'chatav Rabbeinu Hagol Mahari Abuhav, in source top of page number 3, Lo yitpalo lalehem lefi sheyesh lachush latirda shehutarud shema yitpo lo yitkavein bitfilato. A person should not daven on these high things because there is room to be concerned for distraction. Why? Because shehutarud shema yitpo. Because when you're on a high place, you have to worry about making sure you don't fall off. You don't fall off chas v'shalom and hurt yourself. And so he says that's the reason for this halacha, is because if you're standing on a place that's elevated, you're not going to be able to focus on tefillah because you're going to be too busy focusing on making sure you keep your balance and making sure you don't step somewhere where you're not supposed to step, or you make sure you don't lose your balance, that you don't fall off chas v'shalom and hurt yourself or embarrass yourself. And so it's for this reason that that we have this halacha. So that's a very utilitarian reason. That's very practical, but that's reason number two. In which case, by the way, we're going to have to see if he clearly cares about this halacha, why he designed the shul with the bima that is so very high up. We're going to get to that. The truth is, I quoted from the Beis Yosef. I didn't quote from the Sefer of the Mahari Abuhav himself, because I couldn't find exactly where he says it. I think it's probably in his book called Menorat HaMa'or, which is his famous work on tfilos and other areas of halacha and some Musar as well. But in any case, that's how the Beis Yosef, one of the primary halachic texts written by Rabbi Yosef Cairo, quotes his argument. So we have two reasons for this halacha. Number one is arrogance. Number two is make sure you don't fall, because otherwise you're not going to be able to concentrate on your tefillah. Number three is to emulate the temple service, which is kind of what you were alluding to. One of the laws of Kohanim's service is that there can't be an interposition between the Kohanim and the ground. That's why Kohanim have to serve in the temple barefoot. It's because there's not allowed to be an interposition, what we call a chatzitza in Hebrew, between the Kohanim and the temple, the ground that they're working on. So we know that our tefillot take the place of the korbanot. We know, as in fact, we've spoken about this at length in other contexts, that in the absence of the korbanos, we now have tefillah to approach God. And so, in that analogy, if tefillah has taken the place of the korbanos, so then the tefillah is the korban, and who's the Kohanim? Where are the Kohanim? Some of us might be Kohanim anyway, but we're the Kohanim who are offering that tefillah. And so if you want to say that, so that means that maybe tefillah takes on some of the halachos of korbanos. And in fact, that's what the Tur argues. In reason number 3, in source number 7, he says, V'shelo yichotz b'davar beino levein hakir. There should not be any interposition between the person praying and the wall. That's another halacha we'll get to another time. Suffice it to say that you don't all have to run and try to make sure that you're standing as close to the wall as possible when you daven. We'll talk about that another time, even though maybe according to some it would be very important, but it's obviously not practical for everybody to be facing the wall. Otherwise, nobody would be facing the wall because there would be too much. Everybody's trying to clamor to get to the wall. Also, what counts as a wall is a discussion for another time. I really brought the source for the next part. Uveino lekarka. There should not be any interposition between the person davening and the ground. Why? Dugmat haKorban shechatzitza poselet beino levein hakli uveino leritzpa, because it is essentially like a korban. Tefillah is like a korban, and just as a korban cannot be offered by somebody who has an interposition, by a kohen who has an interposition between his feet and the ground, so too the tefillah cannot be offered by somebody who has an interposition between their feet and the ground. And it is for that reason that if you stand on an elevated platform or something like that, what emerges is not a problem of the height per se; it's a problem of there being anything severing the person from the ground that they're standing on. And just as that's a problem for a korban, tefillah takes the place of the korbanos, so it's a problem for tefillah too. Does that make sense? Okay. So kohanim, all these are all great questions, but we're gonna try to answer them. Okay. So that's reason numbers 1, 2, 1, 2, and 3. So number 1 is because of arrogance. Number 2 is so that you don't lose your concentration because you're going to be worried about falling. And number 3 is to emulate the temple service. Okay, great. So we know the details of this halacha. We know the source for this. Sorry, we know the source for this halacha. We don't yet know the details. That's what we're going to talk about now. And we know the reasons for this halacha. Let's talk now about some of its details. The first question we probably have to answer here when it comes to what are the details of this halacha, meaning how practically is it observed, is what is meant by tall? If you want to say that it's usher to daven from a high place, well, what is considered halachically to be high? What's the threshold for that? What's the barometer where high becomes too high? So this is an interesting discussion, and it's really a machlokas rishonim, although how it trickles down to the practical halacha is very interesting. Source number 8, the Orchos Chaim of the Rush, is very clear that this halacha applies lo yamor mitpala b'makom gavoa asara tfachim oyoter. This applies to someone who davens 10 tfachim tall, 10 tfachim or taller. 10 tfachim is approximately between 32 and 40 inches. So it's about yay high or something like that. So if you're standing on a platform that's higher than that, that's what the problem would be. But less than that, according to the Rush, there would be seemingly no issue. That's shita number 1, straightforward. This applies only to platforms that are 10 tefachim high or higher. The Mishneh Torah, the Rambam, in his Mishneh Torah in Hilchos Tefillah Perakei Allah Chazayin, source number 9, disagrees. He has a much shorter amount. He says, lo yamor b'makom gavoa shalosha tefachim o yoter v'hit palel. You should not daven on a place not 10 tefachim high, but how high? How high? 3 tefachim high or higher. So that's much shorter. That's a third of, if 10 tefachim is between 32 to 40 inches, so 3 tefachim is about a third of that. So that's much shorter. So the Rambam says, but even according to the Rambam, if it's less than 3 tefachim, there would seemingly be no problem. That's the shita of the Rambam. So we have two shitas. 10 tefachim, 3 tefachim. What's the last shita? So again, here comes our friend, the Mahari Abuhav. And the Mahari Abuhav, even though he designed the synagogue in Tzfat that had a bima that was so tall, he is the most machmir on this halacha, how high it has to be. The Beis Yosef writes, in the name of the Mahari Abuhav, in source number 10, Afilu shelo yehi gavoa shlosha tefachim. He says, forget the 10 tefachim, forget the 3 tefachim. This is usher even if it's not 3 tefachim high, meaning even if it's even shorter than that. In that case, lo yitpalel aleihem. You should still not daven on them. That's the Mahari Abu Hafshita, which is very machmir, apparently. And he doesn't say what the minimum threshold is. He doesn't say maybe even a centimeter off the ground it would still be a problem. He doesn't say that. But he does say that even less than 3 tefachim is going to be an issue. Now, this actually makes sense, according to the Mahari Abu Hav, right? Because what was the reason the Mahari Abu Hav gave for this halacha in the first place? Anybody remember? You're going to fall. You see, he was the one who said that we can't do this because we're worried you're going to fall. So the Mahari Abu Hav thinks about it rationally. So if something is 3 tefachim but not 2.8 tefachim, all of a sudden the fear of falling goes away? No, people are still worried about falling, unless it's really, really close to the ground. People are generally still worried about, especially when they're supposed to be focusing on something else. Most people would prefer that the ground they're standing on is level. And so therefore, the Mahari Abu Hav says, what, 3 tefachim, 10 tefachim? No. If you're worried you're going to fall, and that is the reason for this halacha, then we have to be concerned even less than 3 tefachim. Now, oh yeah? Right. So it's not. So maybe you could say that that's the position of the Rambam also. Maybe you could say that that's the position of the Rambam. Although it seems like the Rambam is saying that because these things are 3 tefachim tall, that's why you can't daven on them. But I admit that it's not 100% clear. I believe some of the Mefarshim and the Rambam talk about this, but I could be remembering it wrong. In any case, that's what the Mahari Abu Hav says. So the Mahari Abu Hav is very clear. He thinks that it's because you're going to fall, and he thinks that we have to then for be really machmir, that even if it's less than 3 tefachim, you shouldn't daven from it. What emerges, though, then, according to the Mahari Abu Hav, and this is a point made by the Toras Chaim, it's on the source sheet, but we're not going to look at it. It's on the very end if you want to look at it. It's Toras Chaim is a sefer of halacha and a number of other things. Fine. So he writes this also, that seemingly, according to the Mahari Abu Hav, then, as long as it's close enough to the ground that you're not going to be worried about falling, that should be fine. Granted, you're going to be worried about falling 2 tefachim, meaning if someone's standing on a platform that's even 2 tefachim tall, that's this big off the table. Like most people, if they had to focus on something else, would want to not stand there because they'd be worried about falling. So that's what the Mahari Abu Hav says. So how do we paskin in this machlokas? What's the halacha? We have 3 different shitas, 10 tefachim, 3 tefachim, or any height that makes you worried you're going to fall, even if it's less than 3 tefachim. So the Shulchan Aruch is very interesting. The Shulchan Aruch writes in source number 11, Shir Makom Gavoa She'amru Shlosha Tefachim, Haya Gavoa Shlosha Tefachim. That the measure of a high place for the sake of this halacha, Shir Makom Gavoa She'amru Shlosha Tefachim, the measure of a high place for the purpose of this halacha is 3 tefachim tall. So how does he paskin? Whose opinion does he follow? Rambam, exactly. Paskins like the Rambam. And therefore, according to Sfardim at least, who follow the rulings of the Shulchan Aruch, this would seem to be clear, that as long as you're davening on something less than 3 tefachim, you should be good to go, And you would make the case, by the way, that the idea here is that you're not concerned necessarily about falling less than 3 tefachim, although really he's not paskening like that, he's paskening like the Shita that says that we're concerned about pridefulness. And if something is not more than 3 tefachim high, so that's the halacha would say, there's no element of pridefulness attached to it. And in fact, we have a halachic concept called lavud, which means that things that are within 3 tefachim of one another are considered as if they are the same as that thing. So for example, let's say you need to build a sukkah. So you have boards that are spaced 3 tefachim apart. So you have one board, 3 tefachim, and then another board. So because they're within 3 tefachim, that's considered like a connected wall for the sake of halacha. So therefore, the same would apply here. If it's within 3 tefachim of the ground, it would be considered part of the ground, and you wouldn't be davening on an elevated place, at least as far as halacha is concerned. So therefore, the Shulchan Aruch would say, and there's no pridefulness in that, because if it's just like the ground, then you're not doing anything different. If you're worried that you're going to fall, so then halacha might not help you there, because even if something is halachically close to the ground, you're still worried about falling off of it. So, okay, that's what the Shulchan Aruch says, though. He paskins like, we only have to worry if it's 3 tefachim. Fine. If you look at the Ramah here, the Ramah doesn't say anything. The Ramah is the great Ashkenazic codifier of Jewish law and custom. He doesn't say anything. But if you look at the previous Simin in the Shulchan Aruch, the passage that comes right before this, the Ramah does disagree. The Shulchan Aruch says in source number 12 on the top of page 4, Hamitpalel lo ya'amod al go al gabe mita v'lo al gabe kisa v'lo al gabe safsal. You shouldn't stand on furniture to daven. Afilu einan gvohin gimel, meaning even if they're not three tefachim tall. Now that, the afilu einan gvohin gimel, is an insertion of the Ramah. So the Ramah then disagrees with the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch, what did the Shulchan Aruch say? Shulchan Aruch said, how many tefachim does it have to be a problem?
Three.
It has to be three tefachim. The Ramah says, what does the Ramah say? Afilu einon gvoin shlosha. Even if it's less than three. So who does the Ramah paskin like? The Mahari Abuhav. The Mahari Abuhav who said that even if it's less than three tefachim, you still have to be concerned. So Nim said that the Ramah is concerned for the opinion that maybe we have to be concerned you're going to be worried about falling. And so therefore the Ramah writes that you're not even allowed to stand on something even if it's less than three tefachim tall. So it would emerge that according to this ruling of the Ramah, Ashkenazim would have to be machmir. They can't daven on anything, even if it's less than three tefachim tall. Now, when it comes to psak, when it comes to the halacha, so there are differences of opinion as to what to do. So the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah is clear. The Shulchan Aruch says three tefachim under that is fine. The Ramah says anything is a problem, even if it's less than three tefachim. The Taz paskins like the Shulchan Aruch. Other Achronim, I believe, paskin like the Ramah. The Eliyarabah, I think, that even less than three tefachim is a problem. And so therefore, if you're Sephardi, maybe you could be fine. You just don't daven on something that's three tefachim tall. But if you're Ashkenazi, any Sephardim in the room? Any Ashkenazim in the room? Okay, just got to make sure people are paying attention. So... Even if they're not, so the truth is that you're absolutely correct. The Mahari Abuhav might distinguish between whether you're merely on an elevated piece of ground or if you're on a piece of furniture. It's possible that according to the Mahari Abuhav, who the Ramah is paskening like, the statement that even less than three tefachim is problematic only applies to furniture and not to the ground. The Torah Chaim in the last source discusses this, and he kind of says that. But you're absolutely right. There might be room to distinguish here between ground and furniture. Absolutely. Absolutely. But according to Ashkenazim, there are a lot of things that need to be clarified here. Because if you want to say that anything less than three tefachim is a problem, then l'maisa, there are lots of things that we are liable to do when we daven that could be problematic. So for example, what if there's a rug in the room? If you want to say that anything less than three tefachim is a problem to daven on, then what if there's a rug you're davening on? What if you're standing on a carpet that's covering the floor? Is that considered to be an elevated platform, or is that considered? See, once you say that anything lower than three tefachim is a problem, so you get into a whole can of worms about how far are we going to take this? Literally, how far down are we going to go before we say that it's not a problem anymore? So mistama, seemingly, because the Ramah paskins like the Mahari Abuhav, that the concern is for falling, and that's why we have to be careful even less than three tefachim. You don't literally have to be careful about even a tiny centimeter off the ground. It would have to be whatever you're concerned that would make you worried about falling. But let's see, because that's just a deduction. If we really take the Mahari Abuhav to his logical conclusion that even less than three tefachim is a problem, then are you permitted to daven even on a minuscule raised platform such as a rug? Again, the svara, the logic, would seem to indicate that you're not obligated in that case, that you're permitted to do that. And by the way, the Prima Gadda makes this point explicitly. Bidyevet, if you did daven on a high place, the tefillah is still going to be valid. Assuming you concentrated, but nowadays we assume that nobody really concentrates properly on tefillah, so you still wouldn't have to repeat it. But b'di'evit, the tefillah is going to be valid generally. So, can you daven on a rug? Let's talk about it. So this is addressed, albeit perhaps indirectly, by rabbinic authorities, and one of them is the Chaye Adam. The Chaye Adam is Rabbi Avram Danzig. Rabbi Avram Danzig was a Polish rabbi. He was born in 1748. He was nifter in 1820. And he wrote a work of halacha. He wrote a number of works of halacha. This is called the Chaye Adam. It's on the laws of Orach Chaim, the laws of daily living, Shabbos, Tefillah, holidays, tefillin, waking up in the morning, things like that. And in the Chai Adam in Klal Chaf Beis Seif Dalet, he writes the following. He codifies our halacha. Asr la'amod al davar gavoha, kigon kli ausafsal, afal gav she'ena gavoha asar tfachim. He says you're not allowed to daven on these things even if they're less than 10 tfachim, which is recalling the Shita of the Rush that we spoke about, but we're not going to talk about that now. But he says, why? V'dahave derech gaiva. Aval asavim sheshotchin bahem biyom kippurim. But regarding what are asavim? Anybody know? Grasses, yeah. But regarding grasses that people put out in shul on Yom Kippur, what on earth is he talking about here? Putting grass in the shul on Yom Kippur. So we're going to explain that in a minute. Aval machatzelet and on a mat it would be permitted. Again, if you want to say that this is a problem of gaiva, that it's going to be prideful, so a rug should not be a problem according to either of these reasons. If you want to say that it's because of pridefulness, so then there's no pridefulness. You're not standing on a rug. It's not so. No one's going to say, "Oh, he's so haughty. He's standing on a rug." They probably think he's Muslim or something like that because Jewish people don't generally specifically pray on rugs, but. But you're not going to think that that's not prideful, and it's also not going to make you liable to fall because a rug is usually very flush with the carpet or very flush with the ground underneath it. So therefore, there shouldn't be a problem. And therefore, he says, "Va'al machatzelet muter." You're allowed to daven on a rug, clear, not a problem. Again, because it doesn't have those two issues. However, he does say, "Mikol makom ra'il izar shelo daven dav al shum daven demechazek gaiva." You should still be careful not to daven on anything that might look like it gives you the impression of haughtiness. Now, how the Chai Adam concludes here depends on how you read the Chai Adam. Is he qualifying the statement he just made about a rug, and he's trying to be more machmir, and he's saying, "V'mikom makom ra'i liza shelo yamod al shum davar demechzei kegaiva." Maybe you should make clear that you don't stand on anything, because that would still look like pridefulness. Or is he saying, "Mikol makom ra'i lizahir shelo yamod al shum davar demechzei kegaiva," comma. Where are you going to put the comma? Is it before mechzei gaiva or after mechzei gaiva? Because that changes the meaning. If you want to say it's proper to be careful not to pray on anything, comma, because it looks like it's something that's prideful, so then the mat's going to be usser. Because he's basically saying, the mat looks like something that's prideful, and therefore it's usser to daven on it. But if you want to say that the comma comes after mechazik gaiva, then it means it's not proper to daven on anything that might look like it's prideful, and you have to make that determination. So what the Chai Adam is saying, maybe, is either that a mat is a problem, and in fact that is how Piskei Tshuva seems to understand it in other authorities, or he's saying, no. I'm not saying a mat is a problem. I'm just saying you have to be careful to think about it how you want to think about it and to figure out what's prideful and what's not prideful. And that's how you should answer this this halacha for yourself. You should figure out this halacha for yourself. That's what the Chai Adam says. But in any case, me'ikr hadin at least, according to the strict letter of the law, it's clear that he thinks you could daven on a carpet. Right? Because that's what he says. Machatzelis mutter. Now, we'll talk about the grass on Yom Kippur. What's that? What's that all about? Putting out grass on the shul? Anybody have any idea what we're talking about here? Putting grass on the shul, on the floor of the shul during Yom Kippur? When what? And what happens during Aleinu? You bow down. Actually, that's exactly what he's talking about. And this is fleshed out further in the Tshuva of the Levushei Mordechai, Archai Madura Kamitzim in Kuf Dalet, source number 15. The Levushei Mordechai was asked a very interesting question. He was asked whether we can put mats down for bowing on Yom Kippur. Well, just to refresh, as part of the Yom Kippur davening, there's a custom to bow down all the way to the ground for certain parts of the davening. However, this is unbeknownst to many, there is also a prohibition to fully prostrate oneself on a stone floor. That's a Torah prohibition called Evan Maskis. And even Derabanan, it would be prohibited to fully prostrate oneself on a non-stone floor. And the custom to put a mat down is that we have today in many of our shuls is in keeping with this. So make sure that we don't prostrate ourselves in a way that's prohibited. That's why, for example, you'll see people spreading out paper towels or mats and stuff like that in front of the shul. Now, the community was solving this issue, apparently. If you look in this, what he writes in the Tshuva, he says, "Aminhag mekadmas dana lishtoach asavim beveis hakneses liyom kippurim agabe heres b'bnei kriyav hishtachaviot beis avoda." They would apparently spread out, instead of putting mats out, what would they do? They would spread grass on the floor of the shul. And that would, when people bowed down, they would be touching the grass instead of the floor. And that would serve as an interposition so that people weren't violating the halacha of bowing down on the ground. Now, that's very interesting historically, that people were putting out grass on the shul floors to see if they could bow down on there, but it created problems. Because what is grass usually attached to?
Earth.
Earth. It's attached to earth. And in fact, Atah, he says, the Sham Rosim Levatal Dar Zabipnei Afar Va'avak Be'ez Sha'ol Al Yadan. Because what happens is every time people go down to bow, they came back up with hands full of dirt and schmutz. And so they wanted to do something. They said, why don't we do something much better? We'll put out mats in the shul. Now we do that. We take it for granted. Many people put out mats. But he said, let's put out mats on the floor. Let's get rid of the whole grass thing. It's causing problems. It's making everybody's hands dirty. Can we put out mats instead? And he says, ultimately, that if the rugs are permanent, meaning if you put out the rugs in a permanent, he says, with a peg, you actually like attach them to the ground, so then they become batel to the floor, meaning they become halachically part of the floor, and therefore it's not going to help you because you're supposed to have an interposition between yourself and the floor. But if you put a rug there, and that becomes a permanent fixture of the synagogue, then it's going to indeed be a problem, because what emerges is that you're no longer having something in between you and the floor. That is halachically considered to be like the floor. And so it's not going to work. And that's why even though we have carpeting in our shuls, many of our shuls, we still put down the mats. Because again, once the carpet is kavua, once that's its special designated place, then it's not going to serve as an interposition to stop you from bowing down. But what does that mean regarding our halacha? If you want to say that it's part of the floor, and therefore it should stop you from, it shouldn't be count as an interposition, that should count as part of the floor, then when it comes to our halacha and davening on top of a rug, it should be better, because you're here, there's a problem to bow down on the floor. Here, there's in our halacha that we're talking about, there's a problem to not stand on the floor. We want to be as close to the floor as possible. So then the Levushei Mordechai, what emerges from this, as well as what emerges from the fact that he makes no objection to this, from the perspective that this is clearly happening in a shul, and there are going to be people davening there, it nimsa that he thinks that as long as the rug is a fixed part of the room, that is not going to pose a problem for tefillah. It's going to pose a problem for bowing, but it's not going to cause anything that causes a problem for bowing is not going to cause a problem for tefillah. Again, because the halachos are reversed. When you bow, you need something in between yourself and the floor, and when you daven, you need nothing in between yourself and the floor. So if something's going to be considered like the floor for the sake of bowing, it's also going to be considered like the floor for the sake of tefillah. But that's a good thing. And so therefore we can daven whenever there's a rug in the room, assuming that that's where it's supposed to go, assuming that's its fixed place, that it's fixed there in place, and that's its designated spot. So that's at least what would seem to be. And so therefore some authorities, again, such as the Piskei Tshuvos, argue that he thinks it's permitted to daven on a rug that is typically fixed to the ground. So the short answer is, can you daven on a carpet? Well, first of all, according to the Rush, you have 10 tefachim. I've never seen a rug that's 10 tefachim tall. I've never even seen a rug that's 3 tefachim tall. So according to the Rambam, you're fine also. According to the logic of the Ma'ari Abuhav, who says that the whole concern is for falling, you still wouldn't have a problem with the rug. And even according to the Shita that says that you shouldn't have anything interposing between you and the ground, so as long as the rug belongs there, as long as the rug is fixed there, it's considered part of the ground, and therefore, it's not an interposition. What would mean, by the way, and some are machmir for this, that if the rug is just a rug that happens to be there, you just laid it out for davening, then one should not daven on it, according to the shita that were like the Kohanim, because that would be an interposition. But again, according to most opinions, it would not be a problem, and so therefore, on a matter of practical halacha, we would be lenient to allow someone to daven on top of a rug, and again, even b'di'evit, such a tefillah would be valid. We're almost at time, so let's discuss one final question, which is, what are the rabbis then relying on? And I say that, indicting myself as a rabbi, that I stand on the bima at the Minyan. In Lower Merion Synagogue, we have a very tall bima. Seemingly, all of the heterim we've discussed are not necessarily so applicable here. Because first of all, my seat, like where Rabbi Shmiman and I sit, we sit on the ends, and there are stairs right there. So maybe you'd say that there is a concern that you're going to fall. And you can say, maybe, by the way, and these are, that is a platform that is higher than 10 tefachim, and it's higher than 3 tefachim. So what's the head there? And looking at the picture on the first page, the bima, which is like 4 or 5 feet in the air, what's the head there? What's the leniency to allow us to daven on these spaces? So the Rambam gives us a good angle to be lenient. In source number 16, the Rambam writes that Hayabinyan Gavoha, if it was a raised platform, Yimieshbo Arba Amos Hal Arba Amos, Shehu Shir Habayit, which is its own separate domain, according to Halacha, Harayu Ka'aliyah Umotor Litvalavo. He says that if it's its own separate domain, then it is considered halachically divorced from the surrounding area, and you would be permitted to daven on it. Okay, that's what the Rambam says. So that takes care, by the way, of any bima that is 4 amot by 4 amot. Around 7 feet. Not exactly 7 feet, but around 7 feet by 7 feet. That would take care of the problem. So any bima that's that large, which is some bimas, that would be fine. That would be fine according to the Rambam. But the Ravid disagrees. The Ravid, Rambam's sparring partner, he comments that no, if you are standing on a raised platform, even if you're on a bima, but you can go down to daven. In source number 17, he says you should go down to daven. Maybe you could be lenient if you have no other choice. But if you can go down to daven, you should go down to daven. So seemingly, then all the rabbis are stuck again, because according to the Ravid, even if you want to stand on the bima, as long as you have the option to go down and daven from a low place, that's what you should do. So Nimtza, that the Ravid would say this isn't going to work. However, the Shulchan Aruch paskins like the Rambam. Shulchan Aruch says that if it was 3 tefachim tall and it had 4 by 4 amot, then it's considered like its own separate space, and you would be allowed to daven on top of it, and therefore we could be lenient. However, this again only works if the space is big enough. Many bimas, in fact, if you look at this bima on the first page, it does not look to be 7 feet by 7 feet. It looks to be much smaller than that. So what's the heter? What's the heter? So the Mishnah Berurah says something very important here in source number 19, and this really resolves all of the difficulty here. He says, "L'inyan shamish shemakom la'amod shem b'kviyus l'tzarchei beis hakneses." If somebody is stationed to be sitting or standing in a particular part of shul that happens to be raised because it's needed for the purposes of tefillah, nira demotar, because that the Mishnah Berurah says is going to be permitted because it's for a need. Meaning, there's not going to be any gaiva. There's not any pridefulness in doing so, because again, if you're there to help out the community, you're there to help out the congregation, it's not going to be a problem. And that's the justification for rabbis sitting on the bima. It's because the rabbis need to be at the front of the room so they can orchestrate the tefillah, so that people know where to find them if they have a shaila or if something goes wrong, so that they can be close to the Kriyas HaTorah, at least because the Kriyas HaTorah is raised. So if they need to say something, it's much easier for their voice to be heard. And for that reason, it would be permitted for the rabbi to sit on a high place, as well as for the fact that maybe the bima is big enough, as the Rambam wrote, it would be its own rishus, and so therefore we are lenient. In fact, again, the same thing for the bima. The bima is raised because that's where Kriyas HaTorah happens. So if it's in a raised area, so the sound is going to travel to all parts of the shul, and therefore we can be lenient because that's a tzorech beit hakneset, and it's not going to be a problem. Okay. fine. That's the question of what the rabbis relied upon. Just to summarize, today we looked at the halacha not to daven from a high place, from a makom gavoha. We explored the reasons for this prohibition, as well as the parameters. How high? What about a bima? And again, part of the purposes of these meetings is so that we know more halacha, so that we understand the how of prayer. We understand functionally and practically what we can do, what we should be doing when we daven. And in the merit, may it be in the merit of our knowing how to properly pray, that our tefillos are answered and that this war is over very, very soon. Thank you all for coming. I'll just give me 1 second.